Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome to another episode with Mysteries with a History, where I'll take you into the wild ride, into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions, and like you, I want answers. Today, we're going to be going into the murky and disturbing topic of alleged human abductions by entities either from another world or another dimension. It's a topic with quite a history and has been the unwelcomed thread that has partnered alongside the UFO research community in general. I would like to say hi to everyone that's in the live chat today, along with my moderators, such as Zenza Bill and Curious George, Akashi Chris. Hi, how's everyone doing? Today, I am joined by my awesome co-host. He's no longer my guest. He is my co-host, Mr. Jimmy Church from Fade to Black. Hi, Jimmy. Are you snacking?
Oh, man. Caught me off guard.
You know, I almost thought about snacking for this show, too. So I'll just vicariously live through you on this one. Oh, some good taste. Right. Classy.
I love turtles. I love turtles so much.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, Christine, how you doing? How you doing? Oh, man, it's so good to be here, be with you. And am I on this cam? I'm on this one.
Right? Okay. Yeah, you're on that one, the one that you're pointing at.
That the drama last night, the internet went down in my studio, and it turned out not to be the internet. It was the router, not the modem, and which has been working just anyway. You know, they came out, sussed things out, and replaced it with this super duper crazy thing with 20 antennas on the top of it, a 10 gigabit router, and I'm here. So there you go. And I want to let everybody know, we're going to jump into this abduction thing really quick. But Christine, I'm just going to tell everybody what happened last night.
Please do.
I'm going to mention the PJs too as well. So a couple of things happened, and Ryan Sprague is involved with this too as well. I hope he's listening. Okay, so internet goes down, and then I redo everything, and I'm like, you know what? We're going to go back on the air. What I didn't know at the time was that there were still issues with the internet. I'm talking about one megabyte upload, which I need 30 for this studio. Okay, so, but I didn't know that. I just got the internet back up and running. So everybody, I text Christina. I said, Ryan can't do the show. You're gonna come on with me right now. And she says, cool. I said, okay. whatever, 1 minute, let's go. And Christina goes, I'm in my PJs. Can you give me a minute? And I'm like, man. So that's what she texted me. And then Ryan texted me back. And so I go to text Christina back, but I don't text Christina. Oh, no, that would be the correct thing. Instead, I text Ryan. And I text Ryan this, and he must have just flipped out. I said, don't worry, nobody's going to see you, just me. No biggie. That's what I texted Ryan, and it's right there for everybody if you want to see it. There it is. That was supposed to go to Christina because she said she was in her PJs. I was like, nobody's going to know. Let's just get the show. Let's go now. Ryan texted me. He's like, dude, what? Right? And I said, oh, hold on a minute. And I texted Ryan back. I said, oh, shite. I thought I was texting Christina Gomez. She told me she was in PJs. And I said, nobody's going to see you. We're going live right now. This is the funniest text ever. And you must think I'm the strangest dude in the history of the world. And so that was last night after the show. And then we didn't get, the internet just wouldn't cooperate. So then Christina and I just chatted on the phone and talked about studio gear for about 30 minutes. And there you go. And she got the secret pics of the bunker too.
I did. It was pretty awesome. And there's a whole nother side to that story. But while I'm telling the story, people are saying that your mic is a little bit too quiet. Do you want to like boost that up a bit?
Oh, my mic is too quiet?
Yeah, a bit.
So I can turn this up.
When Jimmy was like, hey, can you come on the show? I'm thinking, I'm in my PJs. I have to set up my studio. Right. Even just to put my camera up in the mic, and I'm like rushing. And, you know, he likes to use Skype and I don't use Skype. So I had to re-log into my account. It wasn't working. I start panicking. I'm like sweating through my sweater because I sleep in really big sweaters. And I'm like, I'm not going to make it. And then Jimmy calls. He's like, it's fine. It's canceled. And I'm like, whew.
It was so funny. It was just a funny drama filled. Hopefully is my microphone. I mean, I'm cranking, man, in my headphones. So I hope this should be too loud. Okay.
Well,
all right.
We're getting some good feedback. People are saying it sounds fine. Sounds good to me. So I think you're good. But if anything, people in the chat can keep us updated. So today's topic is abductions. Now, there are so many facets to this topic. I think for people that want to know a lot about it, require years and years and years in research. You know, we're only going to be doing it for about an hour and a bit, maybe an hour and a half. So obviously, we're not going to get into like the very, very deep nitty gritty of this topic. But I'm so happy to have Jimmy on because you have interviewed countless people that have studied the phenomenon along with contactees as well. Am I correct? Mm-hmm.
I have.
So I couldn't imagine having anyone else. And let's just get into it. And one person I want to ask you about specifically is John E. Mack.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Harvard psychiatrist in the 90s, right? And he went ahead and he said, you know, I do not believe in this phenomenon at all. Abductions are not a thing. But then he goes ahead and he interviews 30, 40 abductees, contactees. And his mindset definitely changes on the concept that maybe it is possible. Now, I want to hear your thoughts on John Mack and a little bit about possibly if you know anything that he's researched.
Yeah, there. Okay, let's stay with John Mack specifically for a second. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, and John, I mean not John, that's Jimmy. Sorry, I was talking about John. But it seems like your audio is coming from your camera and not from the microphone.
Impossible. But let me see. It is. Okay, hold on a minute. Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Hold on.
When it comes to podcasts, it's impossible to not have technical difficulties.
Okay, now how's it sound?
Oh, beautiful.
Okay.
Like a diamond now if they made noises.
Now it's probably too loud. See, that's what I was saying. It's too loud. All right. I don't know why that reset. Now I've got to check everything for the show tonight. Thank you. John Mack. Okay. I want to go deep on this for a second. John, professor at Harvard, tenured, very respected, and psychologist. And so when he entered into this world of ET and contact, and of course, abductions, which came a little bit later, but full-on skeptic, wasn't part of the community, didn't understand what was going on, starts to figure out a few things. Now, everybody can go and read Ralph Blumenthal's new book called Believer, and it is the story about John Mack, which was just released. It's a best-selling book, and it's great. I have it. But this is what ended up happening. And let me be very clear for everybody when it comes to the abduction phenomena. John started to see, and he died, and so we never really found out, but we know that he started to see similarities in his sessions and with people that he was interviewing. And a couple of those people I've had on the show, okay? And if we have time, we'll circle back to that. But as he started to see these similarities, which he wasn't sharing with anybody, he only kept it inside of himself, and that something flipped with him where he went from skeptic to believer, and he knew that the phenomenon, the abduction phenomenon, was real. Now, what part of it was real for him? Was this, was this something caused with consciousness? Was it a real physical interaction? Were people really being taken onto ships and all of that? That's where his research started. At the same time, there were Bud Hopkins, his friend, Dr. David Jacobs, Barbara Lamb. I could continue on down the list of
Carla Turner.
And she passed away early, but these other therapists that were Yvonne Smith, that were looking into them, they were all friends, right? So this thing that John figured out is something that I also do as well, which is this. I listen to everybody, but I don't share certain aspects of my own experiences. I don't do it, and I don't do it for a lot of reasons. The main reason is I don't want to put suggestions into other people's minds, right? Or maybe,
right.
I don't want to do that. And I also need the proof for myself, for my own experiences, when I hear somebody else say a key word. And let's just say, right? Okay, I'm just going to pull something out of the air. Let's say I saw ET wearing Birkenstocks. Now, I know. Okay, all right, let's just laugh about that for a second. But what if? But I don't tell anybody. And then I'm interviewing somebody, and they go, and you know, the darndest thing, Jimmy, comes out and he walks up to the little gray's wearing Birkenstocks, right? Now that's where I would go, oh, so their experience, right? So I don't share that. And neither did John Mack or Bud Hopkins or Yvonne Smith or Barbara Lamb or David Jacobs. You don't. You're collecting the information. And that's the part of the abduction phenomenon when it comes to therapist and regression therapy that I find, definitive proof? No, but I find it the most intriguing, in that Yvonne Smith knows something is going on because she's done thousands of regressions and she knows these certain things that are similar to each one, but she doesn't tell anybody. She doesn't put it in books. She knows. And that's the part of this phenomenon where I have to step back and say, millions of people are not crazy. They're not. They're not. They're having very similar, as John Mack had said, they are having very similar experiences. They don't communicate with each other. These are people that don't know each other. They're on different parts of the world or different parts of the United States. But yet, they share these same experiences. And now, what it is, John never told us. He was killed by a drunk driver not long ago.
Yeah, 2004.
Yeah, 2004 in London. It was 11 o'clock at night. John, they drive on the opposite sides of the street over there. So he's looking in, he thinks he's in the United States. He's on one side of the street. So he's looking that way when actually traffic is coming from the opposite direction. He's expecting it this way. It's actually coming this way. He gets hit and killed. There was a lot of conspiracy theories behind that, and we don't have time to get into it, but he took his research with him, and that's the unfortunate thing. So that's John Mack, Harvard, and he is one of the examples. When you get into the abduction phenomenon, go focus on his work. I just recently on the show, everybody can go back and listen to Faded Black, I had on Debbie Cobble. And Debbie is an abductee who was featured in Bud Hopkins' book, who I just talked about, Intruders, and she is the central figure in that book. And when you have her recount her experience, which is just, incredible. Again, it's very similar to so many other abduction cases that have been documented throughout the years. So go and listen to Debbie Cobble. She's amazing. And she's also in a film that I just completed that'll be coming out in November. And you can check Debbie out in that film. But when it's not just Travis Walton, it's not just Betty and Barney Hill, it's not just Calvin Parker, all great cases and we need them and stuff. But there are other cases out there, and Debbie Cobble is one. She's just incredible. So that's John Mack, Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs, Yvonne Smith, Barbara Lamb, and many other great therapists out there. And I know that was long-winded, but it just needs to be said for those out there that are just getting into this abduction phenomenon and need to go and find more answers and do some research.
And it's a bit hard to do because a lot of these cases are, just alleged witness accounts. Yes, there can be some evidence that can be placed on the body, such as scars and bruising and things of that nature. But overall, at least from what I've done through my research, it's a lot of just kind of believing them. And before we go a little bit more deep into that, I would like to say thank you so much to Inquire Within. They say, oh, yes. Look at this magical duo of intergalactic epicness. Keep the good times rolling. And then Disclosure Team, thank you so much. And John Russell as well. You guys are absolutely spectacular for supporting this channel. John says, and thank you, he says, would be so cool to have Dave Politis on the show. Do you guys agree his research proves not all the entities are benevolent? I've obviously want to have him on the show, but I know that he doesn't really do podcasts or things like that, especially now that his son has passed away. He's been a little bit more reclusive. So I think in the maybe a little bit later on into the future, I'll ask him. But right now, for him, I don't think being on this show is very important. But I enjoy his research, Missing 411, and his YouTube channel, along with his documentaries and his books. What about you, Jimmy?
Yeah, he's great. He's a good dude. He's pretty intense.
Do you know him personally?
I do. I do. I've I 1 year at a conference, his table was next to mine. So for 3 or 4 days, literally we're shoulder to shoulder and
oh my gosh.
And talking. But we did a panel together, maybe two. But he's been on the show many times. As a matter of fact, Pilates, one night, doing Fader night, you know, and I'm just hitting the, just going out of the, hey, you're live on Fader Black. You're up next. Who's calling? Jimmy is David Pilates. I was like, dude, what are you, what? And it was pretty funny. He caught me off guard. And instead of a 5 minute phone call, I think he was on with us for about 45 minutes. So, yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude. He's tall, intimidating, big.
He is intimidating.
He is. He's got intimidating eye. He's a big guy, right? Okay, so he looks like a Fed. He looks like a cop. If you ever have bad news knocking at your front door and you open it up, it's going to be David Pilates standing there or somebody that looks like him. And that's the truth. And then you get to know him. And he is intense, but he's very compassionate. He has the ability to crack jokes, but he doesn't want people to know that. And I say that sort of in jest, but he's just an intense individual. And then, you know, you get to talk to him. So you just find out how cool, he actually is. So there you go. Yeah. Get him on the show. I'll give you his number.
I would love to. At some point, I will definitely get him on sometime in the future. So a thing that I had mentioned was, when people are doing their research, there are kind of two standpoints when it comes to alien abductions. You have half the people saying these alien abductions are great. They're trying to heal us. They're trying to warn Earth about nuclear weapons, war, pollution, and they want to help us evolve. Then you have another section of the population saying these aliens are awful, they're malicious, they're very predatorial, and overall, they are abducting humans for their own gain. And I was thinking, I've covered quite a few abduction stories, and I've interviewed someone such as Preston Dennett, who has done extensive research when it comes to abductions. And he said on the show that overall, you know, abduction shouldn't be seen as a bad thing. Because they're trying to help us. And in many cases, they heal you, this, that, and the other. And then I started kind of digging deep into Carla Turner's research. Mm-hmm. And her standpoint was completely different from what I had read previously. And she stated, like I had just mentioned a little while ago, that alien abductions are terrible. These are very malicious creatures who, in a sense, are pretending like they are siding with humans, saying that they want to help us, this, that, and the other, but they're actually lying and they're doing it for their own gain. I found that really interesting, and I 100% want to hear your thoughts on that take on it.
Yeah, and Carla Turner was amazing, and everybody should go back and look at some of her presentations over the years. She was about this tall. And it was really great to see her at the podium because she's holding onto the edge of the podium. I'm just speaking. She was great. She was precious. Anyway, Carla, very smart. And now, I'm gonna put it to everybody this way: being abducted can't be fun, right? Now, I'm sure it can be, but the experience itself has just got to be terrifying. Just as terrifying as a dog catcher chasing down a dog. Dog doesn't want to have a noose put around his neck. A dog doesn't want to be taken. A dog doesn't want to be abducted, right? And that dog is panicking. And it would have to be very similar to, you don't want to be kidnapped. Who wants to be kidnapped? Who wants to be thrown in the back of a van? And driven away, and you don't know what's happening, you're going to panic. They may be taking you to Magic Mountain, but you don't know that
right? You don't know. You're going to panic. It's not a good experience. You throw in E.T. and aliens into this, some completely foreign and strange experience. It's got to be terrifying. Nothing may happen, injuries or, whatever, a dissection, an autopsy, right? You don't know a live right. autopsy, right? But the experience itself has to be terrifying. But most of the abductees, and this is where I'm going to stay on the controversial side of the fence. I think most abductees, no matter how terrified they were, no matter how scary the experience was, would not want it to have happened to them. Right?
Okay, I'm really happy you brought that up, Jimmy. I'm sorry, keep going.
They wouldn't change the past, right? I mean, they wouldn't. Would they do it again? Probably most of them would. Absolutely. And who wouldn't? Come and take me. Let's go. Let me see what this is all about. But now there are the other experiences. When you talk to Whitley Strieber, I'll be on Whitley's show this Thursday, speaking about this stuff. So I love being a guest on other people's show. Is that Whitley's experience? It's a terrifying movie. The book is pretty scary. And he certainly has been very forward about his experiences, but he has had continued contact and with what he calls the others. And I think he's okay with it. He's found a way to deal with it. And just like anything else, Carla, Marshall Summers, or even David Jacobs, who talk about the colonization of this planet or the takeover of this planet, that's not necessarily the abduction phenomenon, right? So Marshall Summers saying, and it's a great message, something we should listen to, but Marshall says, they're here to get this planet and its atmosphere acceptable for them so they can move here. So those are the changes that are going on to this planet, right? And that's pretty scary. That's not benevolent. That's pretty mean. That's as benevolent as it gets. And David Jacobs and his take on this and Carla Turner's. Well, okay, that's fine, but I don't necessarily agree with that. If there was anything violent or mean or just wrong, I think we would know about it and there'd be another conversation right now. I think that the abduction phenomenon is real and those experiences are real, but I think in a general sense, it's been a very positive one. Scary? Yes. Mean? Right? Is it that? No, I don't think it's that. But scary, certainly. So I don't necessarily prescribe to a negative approach by ET with this.
Well, now, I'm really happy you brought that up because there's something that I read in a book called Dealing with UFOs, Aliens, and Higher Dimensions by Laura. And she used to be friends with Carla Turner. And she mentioned something relating to the alien abductions and clarifying it kind of as the Stockholm syndrome. Before we get into that, I want to say thank you so much to Akashi Chris for the super sticker. And John Russell says, if they're supposedly trying to help us, they're sure going about it in a funny way. There are better ways to communicate, etc.
And John's right. John, right. There, John is, John, thank you for making that point. Now, John's right. Except
..
But is this, we can't, we're an intelligent species, right? We're sentient and we also have compassion and empathy. We should have, a sense of morals, right? We should have, I don't always practice it, right? Okay. But, that being said, some people like to go fishing. Do you like to go fishing, Christina?
I actually have a huge fear of where I put the reel back and then I catch someone's eye and it goes into the ocean. I don't know why. It's like the weirdest fear. So no, I don't like fishing.
Or your own eye. So
maybe.
But people fish, right? People fish. Grabbing that fish out of the water. Boom. You just grab somebody's mom. And you pulled somebody's mom out of the water. Now the baby fish are down there. Where'd mom go? She was right here a second ago. And in a few minutes, that fish is going to be gutted, clean, and fried in a pan. Now, I don't think, as far as the fish go, that they're cool with that. Right? Okay? All right? Now, that may be a crazy analogy, but we go all the time into the rainforest of Brazil, and we're looking for new species. And we find a new species that's never been discovered. And maybe it's a cute little furry mammal rodent thing, you know, and wow, never seen. It looks like a rat, but it's not a rat. It's kind of cute. It looks more like a hedgehog. Wow, this is a hedgehog rat. This is a new species. Boom, grab it, throw it in the bag, put it on your backpack, and you head back out of the jungle. And you just took, you know, mom away from her kids. And this hedgehog rodent is going back to the United States, where it's going to be thrown in a cage and dissected. Is that cool? Well, no, but we do it. Now, if a species out there that is a million years ahead of us, how would they look at us? Right? How would they look at us? How are they looking at us as these brilliant inventors of the internet, this compassionate sentient species that, you know, that it, no, they wouldn't. In fact, they wouldn't really have a, you know, but maybe they would want to learn, right? And they need to bag and tag. So they grab Christina Gomez, throw her on the ship, and check you out, right? That's, you know, so, and hopefully it's a catch and release, right?
Hopefully. Yeah, unless they provide us noodles, then I would be somewhat okay with it.
You know what? I thought about you today. I bought a case of ramen from Costco, and I wrote Christine on it with a black Sharpie. And but is that wrong? Is that a dark way of looking at this? No, it's not. It simply isn't. And we have to accept, if we're going to go and claim a benevolent or a malevolent race, or abductions are shouldn't be happening, or this, well, we have to take a hard look at ourselves and consider how other advanced races that are out there above us, because we don't think anybody's smarter than us. We don't think anything, you know, that, because we're the king of the earth, right? The kings and queens of the earth. There's no other species like us here. But there are more intelligent species out there. Now, if they wanted to come over and take over this planet and be mean and abduct everybody and take us back and make us into a slave trade in Zeta Reticuli, I think that would have already been done. Maybe it has. I don't know. But I think by and large that most abductees are cool with it, and given the chance, they would do it again.
Dang. Zofa says, thank you so much for the super chat. They say, I, Zofa of Earth, hereby give my consent to be taken aboard a transmedium craft for scientific and or political purposes by non-human intelligences.
Bam.
I am all for it. And I mean, it sounds kind of like the Carl Higdon case, all honesty. Diego Flores, thank you. They say, that is not how things are done anymore. That is the model from the 50s. Now it is photos and videos. How they document animals in the wild. And that's an interesting point. And I feel like in some respects we're kind of outdated. And in other respects, we don't know what we're talking about. Charles then says, also thank you. When Chris Bledsoe So I actually don't know anything about Chris Bledsoe. So I haven't done my research, and I might have to figure out a little bit on who he is. But I think we've briefly talked about him, right, Jimmy? I think
I'm sure we have. I don't think Chris has been abducted. I don't think we've ever talked about it. But Chris Bledsoe is a pretty you know what? We'll do a whole show on Chris Bledsoe after we do our Bob Lazar special.
Okay, I need to do more research on him because there's a lot of thoughts on him. And then Akashi Chris says, if we are no different than a bug to them, why not mutilate us? I'd say manipulate, but that's not it. If we were nothing, why not crush us?
Okay, let's come back to that because I want to. You just put it up. John Russell says he has to disagree. Seems like many more are traumatized. I'm going to disagree with John, but. John, this is just spirited debate and conversation. I appreciate that because although you are right and in certain cases where he says, you know, their abduction experiences, you know, they benefit from them and fear that they will happen again, talking about the abductees. Yes, but how many abductees have said over and over again that it's a message of peace, that we are ruining this planet, that we are not ready to have a seat at the table. And as soon as we grow up and learn how to love each other and accept one another, until that happens, but the way forward is peace and love. And that's what runs the universe. What about that message? Is that a message of fear? And those abductees that have, and you hear it repeated over and over again that they were chosen to share this message. I'm talking about the abductees, right. and they were given this message of love and how to move forward and how to take care of our planet and how to love one another and how to be accepting of everybody. What about that message? What, you know, and those abductees, that's not out of fear. And those abductees can't wait for the next trip. So, John, your point is well taken. And certainly there are some that are afraid. And it was a terrifying experience. No question about it. But I think if we took a poll, I would say that I would go with 95. I'm not going to say 99.9. I hate it when people say that. But I'm going to go 95%. 95% of abductees are cool with it. They may have been scared, but they would do it again, and they certainly wouldn't change the past. There you go.
So then do you think because maybe these experiences are somewhat pleasant, even though when they're under hypnosis, it obviously wasn't. They really were probed, you know, bad things did end up happening to them. Do you think it's possible that they're affected?
Did you say probes?
Probed.
Probed.
But then that would lead me to the question, do you think it's possible that maybe they have Stockholm syndrome, right, where they might believe, right, that that after they're being captured, right, these hostages, these abductees can kind of learn to appreciate these beings that took them because it may be in some respects they were kind of nice to them, you know, here and there. We know from abduction stories that they say, okay, now look into my eyes. You're going to calm down. You're going to relax and you're going to end up falling asleep. Or they put suggestive memories when they come back to Earth. So I found that when I was researching Carla Turner on that book, I was like, you know, I didn't really think about that. That's a really interesting statement, either if it's correct or incorrect. I think it's a very nice thing to debate on and hear people's input on that.
Yeah, you're right about that. And Stockholm syndrome, which is, you know, an example generality of, you know, what is Stockholm syndrome? You get kidnapped and then you end up liking your captors.
Like Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. Maybe falling in love. And okay, I don't normally do this. In fact, I've never done this before. It's the first time on this show. when I was abducted, I took one of the alien probes. You want to see it?
Sure. He's so excited. All right. I'm ready.
This may be traumatizing for some, but here it is. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's right here. It says right on the side. It says to Jimmy, our ET brother. Right there, it's a little tack. And there you go. And so, and look at the,
that's pretty big to fit inside of you.
Well, it depends on which end goes first. So, but here's the deal though. Here's the dealio.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the dealio. How many times can we go into a repeat of a message where it is over and over again, where the abductees come back and say, you know what? It was pretty scary. Got woken up, something in my room. We left and I'm on a ship. And I was shown things. I was shown things from the past. I was shown things from the future. I saw other humans on board. There were, observation tables, exam tables, and all of this, all of it. And they come back and say, you know what? I need to talk about this because it was pretty fascinating. This is what the aliens look like. And this is the message. This is what I saw. And this is, they don't talk about becoming friends. I think that, the Stockholm syndrome part of this, but they talk about the mechanical emotions, that there wasn't anything friendly. There wasn't, a bonding that took place, that everything was done as a job, and that maybe one race or species of these beings showed a little bit of compassion, but not really. And that it was just their gig. And I have to go and accept that. And I'll tell you why. We talk about this all the time. There are, billions of planets like ours. And if you're out on a mission to go and visit and research, a list of, 10,000 planets in this sector of the Milky Way, you're just here for a job. You're here, you're punching a clock, you're coming in, you're getting your stuff done, and you're splitting. You're not here to go to the Super Bowl or come over for movie night. That's not why you're here. You're here to get work done and to move on. And the human species and Earth is just one example for them, one stop for them of thousands that they've already done and thousands that they're about to do. And are we anything special? We're just as special as everybody else, but they are just clocking this in. And that's my take. So they come by, they see that we're damaging our planet, and you guys are kind of screwing things up here. You might want to get that in order. And this bullets and guns and wars and stuff, that's not the future. You guys need to put that stuff away, and nuclear bombs are bad. All right, we got to go. And we hear this over and over again. I don't think there's anything to be afraid of. Being abducted, it's traumatizing. It is. But you'll go back and do it again. And there you go. Go ahead, Christina. I know you want to say something.
Well, John says, again, thank you, says, Politis research has proven that even some very small children have been taken and returned face down deceased. It seems some beings don't recognize consent and don't respect our lives.
Yeah, okay. But Pilates, although some of his stuff could be E.T., could be aliens, could be humans, could be criminals, could be Bigfoot sometimes. His research is so compelling. And so when you, and what John is referring to there, there were a few cases, and they're hard to, talk about when they deal with children. And it's very difficult, for me to do, and anybody else, you know, children are, you know, off limits, to
yeah,
this.
They're the most pure beings, the most innocent, and they yeah. don't deserve those kinds of things.
They are. And so when you hear about a child that is, like John says, you know, found face down with his shoes, you know, a half a mile away and in a weird position and his clothes folded up neatly next to him, you know, and no signs of trauma, whatever it may, you know, it's just like weird and it's strange. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean ET. We're talking about the abduction phenomena. Here, John, and we could do a whole show on Pilates, no doubt about it. But I don't think that the majority of Pilates and his cases deal with ET. I think there's something else going on there, and it could be Bigfoot, though.
Maybe, you know, when we talk about Bigfoot, we've got to have Mike on when that time comes.
Yes.
But the one story that I found maybe one of the most interesting and possibly currently one of my favorite stories when it comes to abductions, because again, there are countless stories. There are hundreds and hundreds of stories you can find in books and online. But one that I want to talk about that I've actually mentioned before in another episode is the Carl Higdon case. And I feel like his experience was so positive. He gets invited by an ET to come onto his ship and be like, hey, do you want to come to our home planet and check it out? And also, here's a pill. You don't have to eat for 4 days. Mm-hmm. I
yeah.
think it's yeah. so bizarre. It's yeah. so insane.
Yeah, that whole pill thing kind of bummed me out because food is too important when you're dealing with interstellar travel. You just reminded me, if we go back, and everybody should check this out, but if we go back to Pascagoula and we look at that case, which how do I say this? When you hear the conversations, and they're recorded and there's videotape, of and I'm going to pull something up here for a second, and just hang on, everybody, hang on. I have the internet now, and I don't know what to do with myself. Charles Hixon. Okay, so Charles Hixon, we all know Calvin Parker, and he's been on Fade to Black, and go and listen to that show. But their case, so they get abducted. The police get involved. They get taken to the police station. And this is the crazy part about that case for me, where you just step back and you go, you know what? This thing really happened. These guys are telling the truth. They're not making it up. When the police leave the interrogation room, Charles Hixon and Calvin are sitting at this table talking to each other, and they think they're alone. And the conversation is, man, that was, I cannot believe this just happened to us. You know, ET, what, this is just insane. And Calvin's like, man, I think I'm losing my mind. Right. And they are, this is the way they're not talking about, okay, we got to keep our story straight. Right. No, these guys are in this interrogation room freaking out, and go and watch that tape and then tell me that abductions aren't real. Go and watch that. They, and what they expressed when, you know, they're fishing, right? I see that's the problem. They shouldn't have been fishing. They're fishing, and see a light in the sky comes down, boom, behind them, this craft comes down. The next thing you know, these three beings, you know, like float out and float them back onto the ship. They inject them with some medication to calm them down because they were freaking out. They calm down, and but their experience was a positive one. The robots that they described that were there were kind of freaking, but they didn't harm them, and they were only on the ship for a short period of time, and then they were kicked off the ship. Ship flies away and leaves them right there with their fishing poles, and it's a positive experience. I don't think Calvin freaked out. I mean, they freaked out about what happened, but were they injured? Was there anything traumatizing that happened during that? Or no. And going back, I think, and Calvin over the years, a lot of ridicule, a lot of teasing, and a lot of criticism, a lot of skepticism out there, but his experience itself, I think, was a positive one. And would he do it again? Yeah. And Calvin is a great guy today. He's a great guy. So again, we keep going back to the same point. I don't want to spread fear about the alien abduction phenomenon. I just don't want to. I don't want to be a part of that. I don't think there's enough evidence to suggest that ET is here to be a bad time, you know, or a bad experience. I don't see it that way at all.
Well, it seems like Charles agrees with you, and he says, "How do I get abducted?" There's actually quite a few books, actually. There's actually quite legitimate books on how to get abducted. And there's another book that I read, and it said how to not get abducted. So I guess it just depends on your standpoint.
Right. Or go outside tonight and you just...
And thank you, Bob, so much. Woohoo! Thanks for the super sticker.
Go outside and hold this up to the sky, and you just say,
"Take me." Well, how do we know that they can read? It's an honest question.
What movie was that? Oh, Mars Attacks. Remember when they go on top of the skyscraper in downtown Los Angeles? And that was pretty cool. And she's like, holding up the sign. But I think all of us want to experience it. We really do. It's like the ultimate thing. So again.
Well, on that point, John has a question, and he says, "Does Travis Walton want to be abducted again? Because I mean, you've spoken to him."
Yep.
Would he want to be?
I've teased him about that a lot over the years, and I can't speak for Travis. I don't want to do that, but I think he would do it. Just let me say this. I think he would do it. I think most abductees would. They continue. Look, all of the famous cases that, you know, where they're still with us today, they talk about it. They're out, you know, they're writing books and they're, you know, guests on shows and speaking about it. And they've had a continued contact after their abduction experience. I think the vast majority would love to do it again, and they continue to have contact. Look at a case like Barry Littleton. Barry, just go, and he's been on Fade to Black many times. An absolute positive experience for him that started when he was a very, very young boy and continues through today. And he's okay with it. And he's very detailed in his experiences and sharing it with everybody. You know, you just reminded me. I got to get Barry back on the show.
Well, I would love to get Travis Walton on the show, but he's still unwell. Like, he's still unwell with his chest, right? Because I know he's having some health issues.
Really?
Travis Walton, yeah.
I didn't know he was having issues.
Yeah, when he was on Conflict Radio just a few weeks ago, he was just like, I think like fluid was getting up in his lungs and he had to have some kind of oxygen.
Really?
Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe I'm incorrect. But I do know that he was having some issues with his chest the last few weeks.
Hold that note. Hey, man, comma, how you doing? Question mark. Got to get you back on the show ASAP. Exclamation point. Give me a call. Barry Littleton is great. And that's how you do. Yeah. No, I didn't know that about Travis. I didn't know. I was one of the things that I talk about a lot. And I think that most of us lose sight of it. I certainly do. If you go back, we have to remember that we're in 2021. So there's a case that you were following in 1975. And you were 15 or, you know, 20 years old, and you're following somebody that, you know, was abducted at the age of 30. They're in their 70s today, right? And maybe even older. And that goes with musicians and actors and things. What, you know, that we are 2021. And so that means 40 or 50 years have gone by. And it's a mind-blowing thing. So Travis Walton, right? And if you go back to 1975, how many years ago is that? How old was he then? How old is he today? And we need to continue. I talked to Don Schmidt about this. We need to continue to talk, collect information from all of these people, get inside of their memories of this, and try to get all of the data that we can. Because we just assume that everybody's going to be around forever. And that's clearly not the case. So we need to do that. Just like Roswell, very quickly, Roswell was 1947. And when everything came to light in 1980, that was 33 years later. So that means most of the people that were involved with Roswell, if they were in the Army at the age of 30, right? And now in 2021, all of them are dead, right? There's nobody left. Did we collect everything that, well, it doesn't matter. Now we are interviewing the grandchildren of the witnesses to Roswell. So just like anything else, these abduction cases and these phenomenal experiences, we need to constantly stay on it. Collect the data, interview, document, and convert things over into a historical perspective so we can study it and look at it later.
Well, while we're on that note, you're talking about talking to the grandchildren of those from Roswell. Well, it seems like there are quite a few stories when it comes to abductions that it's actually through the generations. The grandmother or the grandfather got abducted, then it was their daughter, and then it was their granddaughter. There aren't a lot of stories like that, but there are a few that definitely stand out. Have you ever interviewed someone that's had a generational abduction, or what do you think about that?
Yeah,
do you think it's possible?
Me.
You.
What?
What?
What's so surprising about that?
No, nothing. Go ahead and tell the story. I want to hear it.
My whole family was abducted. So my great-great-great-grandfather, as he was signing the Declaration of Independence, couldn't sign. He was abducted on his way to Independence Hall in Philadelphia. I'm making that up. But okay. My point is, I believe it is generational. And when you speak to somebody that has had a life of contact, you immediately find out that their mother had contact, their father had contact. And then it goes, you know, one step further. And then before you know it, you know, their great grandfather and great grandmother talked about Grays in 1890, right? Or what? Yeah. And so what do we do with that? How do we unpack that? How do we frame that with today? Well, just like John Mack and Bud Hopkins and others, Yvonne Smith, that look at this, they definitely take a look at the generational aspect of it. And it is something that they have spoken about. And we find that repeated over and over again today. My own experiences, you know, I was saying all of that in jest. I don't know if my mom had any UFO experiences, but she definitely was pretty trippy as a young woman when I was very young. And she was into all of these things. She was into UFOs, and she was into Ouija boards and ghost writing and Edgar Casey and these things. But I never talked to her about UFOs. That doesn't mean that she never had a sighting, but I don't know if I was ever abducted. I don't think so. But when you talk to abductees, you quickly find out that not only did their parents and grandparents have stories to share, but now their children of abductees are having experiences. So yeah, I think it's generational, and why not?
But my question is, so if there are generational abductions, do you think there may be some kind of tinkering going on with the genetics? Like, why do you think they're being watched one after the other?
Yeah, why not? I mean, why not? I think that's one of the best points. Oh, I just got a text back from Barry. See, that's how you see. Are you learning? Are you learning, Christina? That's how you book a guest. Go on somebody else's show and just pick up your cell phone and book a guest live on the air. Barry Littleton is going to be on Fade to Black again. Everybody needs to check out Barry. You need to get Barry on here with you.
Well, then pass me his number.
It's right here.
I need your whole contact list. Just pass them all over.
Everybody wants what's in this phone. Everybody. Now, okay, so what was the question again?
About generations and when it comes to abductions.
Right.
But is it because of genetic tinkering, or why do you think that is?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yes. But I believe that genetic tinkering has been going on for a couple of 100,000 years. So if we look at Homo sapiens sapiens, you're in college. Go chase down an anthropologist, some crazy professor in biology, and go up to him and go, so I read something last night. It's kind of strange. But Homo sapiens sapiens, we've only got 46 chromosome pairs. But primates have 48. Isn't that a lot of information in those two extra chromosome pairs? How come apes, how come chimpanzees, how come little baby spider monkeys are not designing their own cell phones and building condos in Africa? Just ask them that, because it doesn't make any sense. How did this miracle of a change in our chromosome count and our DNA just happen? How did this just suddenly, Homo sapiens sapien appears here 200,000 years ago with 46 chromosome pairs? We're supposed to be related to primates, right? What's up with Cro-Magnon, and what's up with Neanderthal and their chromosome counts? It doesn't make any sense. Unless somebody did the snip snip 200,000 years ago. So back to your point. Today, you come by Earth and you check out a family's DNA, and you look and you did something 200,000 years ago, and now you're going around the planet checking out DNA, possibly altering DNA, maybe in a family tree, looking at it, changing things. It could have to do with diseases. It could have to do with your height. It could have to do with your hair color, whatever it may be, your intelligence, whatever it may be. And you're going and looking and modifying, because we were modified 200,000 years ago. Somebody did it, and it wasn't by accident. And so the question of with the family and the abduction phenomenon and DNA and research going through the family tree, generational, is that a possibility? I think it's been going on for 200,000 years. So,
and I think if we can do it to plants, you know, modified plants, dog species, cats, and so forth, I don't see why other entities can't do it as well.
We're doing it ourselves today. CRISPR technology, the modification of DNA in this country, what actually goes on ethically or unethically, legally or illegally, I don't know. I don't have those answers. But I can tell you right now in China, you want a disease-free kid, and you want to choose the height and intelligence and body type, and you know what? They're doing it over there. So, yes, yeah. And if we're doing it with our primitive little brains on this planet, ET has really got a hold on this. They did it 200,000 years ago, Christina.
And with that, we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Micah Hanks. And let me tell you something. I support Christina Gomez as a Patreon subscriber. And here's why you should, too. She brings all of her unique insights to a whole new generation, and all while she's also going through college. Listen, support Christina. Become a Patreon subscriber today. You won't regret it.
That went so smooth.
Wow, man. And you just like, we'll be right back.
You know, I'm not as good as you yet, because you have to do so many of them and you got really awesome commercials. So I'm learning from the best.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I'm more than jealous.
No. You have an awesome crew to help you out. There, while we're still on the topic of abductions, we still got a little bit of time. Let's talk a little bit about probes and kind of the physical evidence that can be left after an abduction. There are a lot of stories by abductees who say, well, I can't really remember what happened until they enter hypnosis, but when I woke up, I have these weird scars, weird bruises, some parts of my body hurt, such as the genitalia, and or in some cases, my whole body feels all achy. How could that be if I was just very peacefully sleeping in bed? And then through hypnosis, or maybe through just memory, I'm able to remember sometimes of what actually happened. Now, from all the people that you've interviewed, abductees or those that have done the research on it, what have you learned from them when it comes to the physical evidence?
Well, most don't want to talk about if it was, you know, the feeling of it may have been sexual in nature, or that there was something that made them uncomfortable. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it because, you know, what happened to Whitley, you know, you don't want to become an episode of South Park, right? And that's pretty harsh. And the jokes and the ridicule. So most don't. Some do. And I've had Aaron Montgomery on the show recently. Of course, Debbie Cobble on the show recently. Geraldine Orozco and others that talk about a subject that is very, very difficult to talk about and today's world of trolls and the way people deal with social media, you go and you talk about something like this that's very sensitive, it is very private, and you don't necessarily want your friends or your employers or your schoolmates or other people out there to know about this very private thing. So it doesn't get discussed a whole lot. All right. Now, and that is the stuff of a sexual nature. But let's flip it a little bit. The scoop marks. The scoop marks freak me out. and there was a certain trend of these scoop marks. Now, what are scoop marks? Scoop marks are, and it just sounds painful. It's certainly not cool, but that after an abduction experience, some have reported scoops taken out of their skin, you know, and you always imagine this sounds like it hurts. Number one, number two, imagine like a little baby ice cream scoop, right? Little, you know what I mean? And then ow, right? Okay. Now this went on for 15 or 20 years and people waking up with this damage to their skin and the scar stays there forever. What's going on with that? Now, that is certainly evidence. The other evidence, so we'll leave scoop marks there. Everybody can go and research that part. But I think there is other evidence of implants. And without talking about Dr. Roger Lear, Whitley Strieber has certainly spoken about his implants, which were behind his ear and moved around. Others have reported the same thing. You know, behind the ears is a very popular place for this. I'm always checking, by the way. I am. I'm always. No, I'm cool. Yeah, okay, I'm cool. I'm always checking. You never know. But other parts of the body, too, as well. Neck, legs, arms. Yeah, feet. Now, feet. Okay, can I say this? Let's get off of the UFO subject for just 2 seconds. I've been seeing small children and babies that are so much smarter and different with larger eyes than their parents. Genetic manipulation is more evident lately.
I have bigger eyes than my parents.
Christina, you are alien. You're fully alien. Hey, you know what? Everybody should go and watch the movie Alienated. And when you look at the movie poster, it's two people holding hands, a man and a woman. Go watch Alienated. It's an ET love story. Physicist meets alien female, they fall in love.
Yeah. Well, Jazz says this whole conversation is really uncomfortable, but clearly there are people who need to have it. And I agree with you. Yes. At the very beginning of the show, I said this is a very murky topic that people definitely don't want to cover because it's kind of painful to listen to that, or it just sounds absolutely absurd. But I think for people that are interested in the UFO topic, or for those that want to have this kind of conversation, it's so important to have diverse knowledge on all aspects of ufology, and especially UFO abductions. There are countless hundreds of stories, and they all in many respects share a lot of similarities that people simply don't want to talk about. So I'm happy that we're having this conversation today.
Well, look, and Jazz, I appreciate that. It is uncomfortable to listen to. And there's other aspects of this that we haven't even touched tonight. Mm-hmm. Human mutilations. We talk about cattle mutilations. How about human mutilations? You know, there are zones to go into here, but if you ever wonder who is being abducted, look at your neighbor, right? Just look at somebody that you would never, you don't have to wear a tinfoil hat and have an ET bumper sticker on your car to be an abductee. That's not usually the case. And I have met abductees, I swear, which are my phone is blowing up. That's Jim Harold, my guest for tonight. But go and look at and listen to Debbie Cobble. I brought her up earlier. If she isn't the mom next door, that person doesn't exist. She's just as normal as anybody that you can put into your brain. You know, and that's what's going on here. So is it uncomfortable? What Debbie went through, so you're sitting next to this perfectly normal person, and then she turns around and starts to tell you about her abduction experience, and you're going to get uncomfortable. It's pretty crazy, right? That information needs to be shared. If she is willing to step out and share her story and go public with it, it needs to be talked about. It needs to be discussed. As uncomfortable as it may be, I think many out there that are studying the ET and UFO phenomenon and want disclosure, there is other aspects to this that you have to listen to. And the abductee phenomenon is one of those. There is something that we haven't discussed. And again, Jazz, thank you for making this point. It is one of the most uncomfortable parts of disclosure.
It is. It is. And Jimmy, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you know, you're doing a lot of freeze ups on your video feed again, and like a lot like how it was last night on Fade to Black. Could this be something that your camera feed to your computer, like there's not a connection there or something? Because nope. People in the live chat are kind of mentioning it, and I'm seeing it as well throughout the show. I just want to make sure that everything's going to go smooth for tonight, especially. So you don't see any freeze ups on your end?
Nope. Everything looks fine to me. Now, here is, but here's the point that I wanted to make. And I am going to run some diagnostics while we are talking. Is that the more that the Senate, the UAP task force, and these reports are coming out and the discussion that is going on out there, that is going to, no, man, I've got literally 1.1 gigabyte download, 1.1 gigabytes. That's a download. And I'll tell you what my upload speed is here in just a second.
Then I don't know what it is. That's so bizarre.
Yeah. Upload is running around 49 megabytes upload. And that's insane. So I don't know what everybody's talking about. So back to the more that disclosure is being discussed and the more that the mass media is discussing this and the Senate Intelligence Committee, the Department of Defense, the DIA, Lou Elizondo, the New York Times, Tucker Carlson with that bow tie, the more that people talk about this, abductees are going to step forward. Their comfort zone is there, and they feel that they can finally discuss this stuff in the public without ridicule and teasing, as it should be. So the more that we move forward, these stories are going to continue. They're not going to go away. We need to listen to everybody out there. And as soon as we get some official confirmation out there, you know, from the government, we're really close to that now. Kind of feels like they already have. But if that bust out, think about all of those abductees that are finally able to say, see, this is what I've been on about. I told you it was real. I told you I've been taught. I told you, you know, E.T. comes out. Christina says, you know, I know this might be a little bit sensitive, but yeah, we've been borrowing a few million people from planet Earth and hanging out with them over the last 5,000 years. And everything that they said was probably true.
Well, okay. All right.
I'm cool with that. And it's probably going to happen.
I have a question for you. We know that these stories are becoming more prevalent, but they're also, in some respects, stories that simply aren't true, where people say they were abducted, but they really weren't. For someone that has heard thousands of people speak, you know, you've interviewed thousands of guests from all aspects of life, how would you be able to decipher when someone is telling the truth about their abduction and when they might be fabricating it or when it might not be true altogether?
Well, how do you do that? I mean, you know, lie detectors.
But I'm saying you, like, if you were like, you are a human lie detector, for example.
Right.
Okay. How would you decipher it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Okay, Christina, here is Broadcasting 101. It's not my job to be judge or jury. It's not. It's simply not. I cannot, with all of the BS that comes out of my mouth, with my own experiences, I don't want people to judge me, and I don't want people to, I'd rather have them listen. They don't have to believe me, but they should always listen without criticism. Okay, that's it. Well, that's what I would like. And I have to give the same respect to everybody else. I just have to do that. And I think with our community that we have to establish some basic rules of ethics that we all must adhere to. And part of that is listening to everybody. Now, why should we? Their memory is, it may not even be accurate, but it's their truth, right? It's their truth. So we have to listen. It may not be 100% accurate. It may not. They may feel that they were taken away on a ship into outer space. What if they were just taken to another room in a ship that was stayed in their backyard, didn't go to space, right? Okay, there's that. Maybe they were never on a ship. Maybe this was projected to them and they thought that they were taken somewhere else, but this was visual. But it's their memory is that something else happened. Okay, I don't know the truth to any of this, but it's not my job to not only be judgmental, but to call somebody out or to be a skeptic. My job is to remain objective. This community has a very good way of policing itself and are able to, a lot of smart people in this community that will take a look at something or an individual or a case or the facts and figure things out. Some of it happens very quickly, like in a matter of seconds. Some takes a little bit longer. But our community in general is accepting of everybody. Why? Well, we're talking about UFOs here. And if you can't, the UFO community, Christine, is like the barber shop. And it has to be that way. You have to be able to come in and go, hey, last night, three chicks from Venus came into my room, kidnapped me, and we went around Saturn, and I did, and they brought me, and all right, you need to be able to say that. And now that's what the UFO community is. Whatever your experience is, come on in, share it with us, because your experience, as crazy as it is, isn't as crazy as mine. Or isn't as crazy as theirs. And that's what that's the beautiful thing about the UFO community. And it should be that way all the time. It's not. It's certainly not. And these days things, have gotten a little, I think animosity is the right word. There's a lot of that goes on, but, using discernment, using, the ability to go squinty eyed, that's fine. Discernment is the other big D. You have disclosure and you have discernment, but judge and jury with me. Nah, I listen to everybody and I give them the same courtesy that I extend to them. And that's what we should always do.
And I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm the exact same. I don't judge. I don't want to judge. And I don't like to give my opinions, really. I just want to stick to the facts. And overall, respect is so important, regardless in what field you're in, regardless who you're talking to, even if you don't like them. Respect over anything, over everything, is the absolute most important.
Now, hold on. This guy, Michael, just says, the community rarely polices itself. It's a business. Michael, you are wrong. Now, I'm going to call out Michael right here, and I'm going to give an example of this. Okay? Did you? Thank you for popping that up there, Christina. You're so good. So I don't know, Michael. Don't know who he is. This isn't anything personal. But a statement like this is completely wrong. I have got 1,000 examples of the community policing itself in rapid fire order. And let me just pull up one. Okay. Here we go. And we've only got a few minutes. And I got to run. We have to run, everybody. Is this 2015, somewhere in there, these photographs surfaced, Jaime Masson, these photographs surfaced showing an alien body. Okay. Don't know how big it is. It's black and white. It looks like it's on display, feeling a little medical, you know. So Jaime goes down to Mexico, or he's from Mexico. Mexico City sells 15,000 tickets in this arena, invites anthropologists and scientists, experts from around Mexico. Richard Dolan flies down from New York. He's there. And I get sent these high-res images. Don Schmidt is involved and some others. And without going into the details, but these pictures are there, but they're small, right? I get sent the high-res ones. And as these pictures, the high-res versions go out, now they reveal it in Mexico City. By the end of the night, the community jumped all over this. Very smart people went in, deciphered the cards, deciphered the words, looked at this, found out where the location where this was photographed, which turned out to be a roadside museum, that it was an indigenous mummy of a baby. And they deciphered the writing on the card that was in front that was always blurry in the past. Nobody could read it. And in a matter of, I'm going to say, an hour. It might have been 2 hours. An hour. The entire case debunked. 15,000 people buying tickets in Mexico City all wasted their money. I don't think Jaime gave any of that money back. But that's an example of the community policing itself, Michael. And this community does it constantly. There are a bunch of very bright people that will take a photograph, that will take a story, that will take a location, that will take a video. Get it broken down, look into somebody's past, look at there's a name that's involved and find out if the, you know, whatever it is. And they will get on it and police ourselves. Nobody else is going to do it for us. And this community is used to it. And that's the way that this community runs. It polices itself beautifully. And the hucksters, the hoaxers, the shysters, all of that stuff are going to get found out and usually in pretty short order.
Well, we've come to the end of our show. Jimmy, tell us again, who is your guest tonight for the show?
Jim Harold, who for 16, 17 years has had the number one show in all of paranormal. The Paranormal Podcast. He also has his Campfire Story series, the number one downloaded podcast. At all of that, he is truly, he's got golden pipes. I always call him, you know, I call him the voice of the paranormal. He is the absolute very best, with a huge, dedicated audience and fan base out there. And it's just an honor and a privilege to have somebody like Jim on the show. I've learned so much from him over the years. And so that's who's on the show tonight. Who do I have on tomorrow? Tomorrow is Christina. Who do I have on tomorrow?
I'll have to use Twitter.
Man, I can't remember.
But on Thursday, it will be Ryan Sprague instead of having him yesterday. And that means Fader Nights on Friday.
Oh, tomorrow night I have Daryl Anka Bashar. Yes, he's the director, you know, he channels Bashar, and he's also the director of the movie Alienated that I keep talking about. Everybody needs to go and watch Alienated, and you can do it right now on Amazon. So that's tomorrow night, Daryl Anka. Tonight, Jim Harold, and then Thursday night is the return of Ryan Sprague. I'll talk to everybody. Thank you so much, Christina. Behave and be well.
Right back at you. And you can find Jimmy on YouTube and KGRA at Fade to Black. I'll catch you, Jimmy, a little bit later today.
I'll talk to you, Christina. Thanks.
Bye. Oh my gosh. I always said I love having him on. I really do love having him on. And don't forget to jump over to the Singularity Lab on YouTube with Michael Mattaluni now at 4 p.m. PST. So jump in, say hi. I'll be there and I'll say hi to you. And I want to thank everyone who joined me in the live chat today. All those who supported the show with super chats, with stickers, and even just writing a ton of comments in the live chat. I want to thank all my moderators and a big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters. Have an awesome week, everyone. Be safe and remember, keep your eyes on the skies.